is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Pat Baldwin, head men's basketball coach at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel, and we are jumping on tonight to talk a little bit of NBA. We are early, 8:42 Tuesday night.
You forgot the most important part of the intro. Future members of the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, we were speculating today that with the way the roster's being pared down there in Brooklyn, that very, very soon Jason and I are going to be getting a call.
Yeah,
we have an in. We know Joe Harris's dad, so I think we might get the call.
We'll have to send him a text and say, hey, if they're looking for someone, I can shoot a corner three if that's all you need from me. I don't think the defense is there, but I can stand in the corner and shoot threes.
Well, let's put it this way. Brooklyn's going to have as much of a chance to win a game, a series with you and I as they would with anybody they're going to bring in and fill out that roster.
And so you're saying there's you and I a chance.
Well, and you and I would probably care more about trying to win than probably what they're going to care about at this point.
Listen, and I'd be at the happiest place on earth. So I'm a big Disney guy. So that would motivate me even more.
If you were getting free Disney, I think they wouldn't even have to pay you. Just
give me room service. I want to play ping pong with Kawhi.
Where's the first stop?
Well, there's only a few things that I'm allowed to do within the bubble. So I think my stop would be the golf course.
Stop. So you're a big Disney guy, but the first place you would go at Disney is a golf course.
Well, they're not allowed to go in the parks.
Well, forget about that. You're going to break the bubble quarantine because you're playing for the Nets, so it doesn't matter. Where are you going first?
I'm probably going to go ride Splash Mountain because they're about to change it.
So, all right, that sounds fair. All right, at any rate. So I think the bottom line here is that what we're seeing with Brooklyn, which some of the guys testing positive, but then other guys opting out or choosing after they've tested positive not to continue to put themselves in harm's way or into the bubble. And then we've seen it with Washington, with Bertans, and now today the news that Bradley Beal's not going to play. Clearly, what is Washington doing there at this point?
They got to make it even numbers. I'm not saying
the NBA pulls them out, but I'm saying when they show up in Orlando, what are they doing there? Are they trying at all? Is it like basically a free agent tryout for the guys at the end of their roster? What does it look like?
Here's what I'm going to tell you right now, Mike. I think if you put the Cleveland Cavaliers in the spot instead of the Wizards, they have a better chance at winning games than the Wizards are going to have.
Well, I think here's the thing. You might be right, but here's the thing to me that I think is going to be really, really interesting. And you're starting to read more and more about it. And I don't know if it's based off of any conversations that writers and people are having with players or it's just speculation. But it seems more and more like obviously the teams that have a chance to win a title are invested and want to come back and want to play because they have a chance to win a title. I think these teams at the back end of both conferences, I'm not sure how motivated any of the players are. I'm not sure how excited they are to be back playing. It seems like you're hearing more and more doubt about whether or not they should be playing at all. And then two, if you don't have a chance to win a title, I guess you're not going to be there that long. You got to get through the regular season and then 1-7-game series in all likelihood. But it just seems more and more like you're starting to hear more of guys just not wanting to go. We just don't want to go.
You think, especially these young teams like a Brooklyn or Washington, that they would be motivated because of the amount of money that they've already lost this season. Because if you get in the playoffs, you get a good chunk of change, right, Mike? I mean,
you do, but I still, especially right, especially if you're a player on a rookie contract, or you're at a veteran's minimum, or you're making the mid-level exception or whatever. Yeah, then playoff money means something. Does it mean something to the guys at the very, very top of the salary hierarchy? Probably not that much, but to the guys at the lower end of it, it does. I think the bigger question just becomes, and this is a societal question, is it safe? Is it smart? Is it what we should be doing? And you and I have had numerous conversations over the last month, 2 months, 3 months, when it comes to our jobs as teachers, when it comes to our kids as students, when it comes to the world in general, and whether or not people should go back to work, whether people want to go back to work, whether it's safe to go back to work. Nobody really knows those answers, because every day you read something, it totally changes. And a lot of the things that you read coming from the same people, the same person, the same source, oftentimes are contradictory in some way. And I think that players, and rightfully so, wonder whether or not going back and playing the season is the right thing to do. And clearly the NBA wonders that as well, but they're moving forward, and I think they should probably, and I think they have to, based on the amount of money that's at stake and what seems to be the low odds that there's going to be something that catastrophic that happens. But I still think that there are players who their individual situation, or just the statistics that say it's only 1% or it's only 2% or it's only this, if you fall into that 1% or 2%, then it's a problem. And it might just be easier to stay at home in your own environment with your own family. And again, I don't know what any of these guys are doing or not doing, and just like we don't know what the general public is doing or isn't doing. But I can see where players aren't 100%. I definitely 100% want to go. I can see that completely.
Yeah, I agree. I think obviously there's probably some that really, really want to go and some that really, really don't want to go. And I guess it'll be definitely something interesting to keep an eye on, for sure. And I think the Magic are going to be super motivated. They're playing in Orlando, and I know it's not the same thing, but they probably had the least bumps to get to where they're going, right? Obviously, they don't have to travel. They literally have to go down the street, and they got to the bubble today. And now, more than likely, I can't imagine that Brooklyn's going to win a single game. Can you imagine they're going to win a single game?
Unless
they're playing the Wizards.
They play the Wizards, right.
So now you're talking the Magic are going to bump up to 7, more than likely. I mean, I don't know how many games behind they are. I don't have that pulled up right here. But there's a good chance that the Magic are going to jump Brooklyn and get up to 7.
I think so.
And then you're going to have Magic play Toronto, which I just looked it up because I wanted to make sure I was not totally just talking. But both games they played against Toronto were close. Now, I'm not saying the Magic are going to beat Toronto, but that would be more interesting to me than – I mean, I think the Magic have no chance against Milwaukee. I'm not saying they have a chance against Toronto, but I think they would get wiped the floor against Milwaukee. Maybe the Toronto series would be interesting just because of a matchup situation. Because, I mean, whoever Milwaukee plays, they're going to wipe the floor with them in the first round. I mean, whether it's the Magic, whether it's the Wizards, whether it's the Nets – any of those three teams, they're going to wipe the floor with them. So, I don't know. I think Toronto will probably wipe the floor, but I think that would be an interesting matchup to see Toronto play Orlando, and I probably would actually watch that game. I don't know. I don't know if you feel that way. Maybe you don't.
Well, two things. One, I think Orlando, I heard that people were talking about, well, maybe it's harder for them to be in the bubble in Orlando because they're in their home city and they could – if they weren't in the bubble, they could just be out doing things that they normally do in their normal life. And those things are all 5 minutes away or 10 minutes away or 15 minutes away. And maybe that makes it harder psychologically. I don't know what the answer is, obviously. And it's probably different for each person. But just throwing that out there, that maybe even though it seems easy and yeah, they didn't have to get on a plane, but they are closer to their homes. They are closer to their friends. They are closer to places and things that they do all the time. So maybe that makes it harder. That's clearly a non-basketball related issue, and nobody knows how that's going to play out. From a basketball standpoint, I think they're certainly better positioned right now than Brooklyn and Washington to move up into that seventh spot, which clearly you want to do to avoid Milwaukee. There's no chance that any of those teams are going to beat the Bucks. Yeah. I don't know if there's a great chance that they can beat Toronto either. I'm not a Toronto truther. I still don't believe fully, even though I know they won the title last year. All these people who are talking up Toronto as a legitimate threat to beat Milwaukee, if both teams are at full strength, I'm just not a believer in Toronto. I'm not sure who else I'm a believer in the East. I don't know that I really think anybody is going to beat Milwaukee if Milwaukee's playing well. Maybe some weird thing happens with the virus or somebody gets hurt or I don't know. But I see Milwaukee getting through the East, in all honesty, fairly easily. But if you're Orlando, you definitely want to move out of that eighth seed and get up to seven so you can play somebody else.
If you had one team in the East that you think could give Milwaukee...
Philly. Okay. It's got to be Philly.
So
I don't think
Boston,
there's any...
right? You don't think there's any chance
no,
Boston?
No, I don't think... See, I don't think Boston... I'm not sure that Jason Tatum is ready to go head-to-head with Giannis over a seven-game series. And as much as I like Kemba Walker and as much as he's been so much better for their chemistry and their team than Kyrie was last year, at his size, and especially when they can throw Bledsoe at him, they can throw George Hill at him, I'm not convinced that Kemba Walker is going to be the guy that's going to be able to lead him, and I don't think Tatum is quite ready yet. So I would still lean away from Boston, and I've already said kind of how I feel about Toronto. To me, Philly's the team. Now, Philly could easily lose in the first round, depending on who they play, if they don't get Indiana. I think now everybody wants Indiana because Oladipo's out, and that's clearly the weakest matchup. But if Philly were to get Miami or they were to get Boston in that first round, wow, you know, they could easily lose that series. But at the same time, you look at the top end of what they could be, and we talked about it. You picked them to go to the finals, right? I believe before the season.
I don't mean to
rub that in, but who knows? You could still be right. But you know, the reason, the case for that was their potential to be just ferocious on defense and to be huge and to be long and to be fast. And when Embiid's engaged, he's one of the best defensive players.
You saw it on Christmas Day, right? That feels like 2 years ago at this point, but
it feels absolutely like 2 years ago, but it was definitely a formula for how Philly could beat teams. Now they made a ton of threes that game I know at the time it was their season high by far. I don't know if it was as we finished out the season, but regardless, they made a lot of threes in that game, but they did do what you would need to do against Milwaukee, which is throw a bunch of big bodies in front of Giannis so that he can't just get to the rim at will. And then you got to hope that some of those guys that are out there on the perimeter for the Bucks just aren't making shots. And if you do that, then you got a chance.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting with Philly because the thing was, when we were kind of still in the season, the middle of March there, it looked like Philly was dead in the water because Embiid was hurt and Simmons was hurt. Well, now they're both healthy. I have to think, and maybe I'm wrong, Mike, is this the last chance these two are going to have to get it right? Like, or are they going to, I mean, I know the offseason is such a short turnaround this year. So maybe, you know, if the whole season plays out and this ends in October 12th or whatever, and then we have the short turnaround, does Philly even try to change anything for next year? Or is it because of the short turnaround that's going to be forced that they're going to start the season with them? I mean, obviously it's going to depend on the outcome, but it's just another interesting storyline because I really think there's a lot of interesting things that are going to happen because of the short turnaround piece. Things are going to happen so fast when we get to the offseason that there has to be so much tampering going on this whole time in the bubble. Like, there's going to be so much tampering going on, and I really hope they get it on camera because that would be awesome. But I don't know what's going to happen, but I think Philly's definitely, of the teams in the East, the most interesting team I want to keep my eye on because, like you said, I think Milwaukee's got a pretty easy coasting in the East, but if Philly could just harness some of that potential, I think they'd definitely be able to challenge them. So
I think Philly has the highest ceiling of any of those teams. I think probably over the course of an 82 game season, or in the case of this season, whatever it was, 67 games, Boston and Toronto are more consistent and played at a better level and weren't affected by the same injuries the way Philly was. But I think ceiling, I think there's no doubt that Philly has a higher ceiling than those two teams if they're playing at their best. And then your question about, do I see this as being the last go-round for Simmons and Embiid? Personally, I don't see it that way. I think this season has been so goofy that if you were going to turn around now in the offseason and get rid of one of those two guys, to me, that would be cutting bait really quick. You think about where they were, whatever, 2 years ago prior to acquiring Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris. You're basically building around these two cornerstone guys. You have the whole process that's in place. And then all of a sudden, you get Jimmy Butler, and that accelerates the timeline. And so now you're, what, 2 years later, maybe less than 2 years later, you're going to jettison one of those guys and basically short circuit the whole thing. They're both really young still. It's not like they're 29 and 28 where you can say they are completely who they are. So I think if you were to get rid of those guy, one of those guys during the offseason, I think it would be a big mistake. Now, does that mean that it won't happen? Not necessarily. I think what you said about the short offseason, when you were talking about that, what struck me or what popped into my head was you wonder if, because it's been proven time after time, that when there are these weird situations in the offseason, like I think about the cap spike, and you had all these guys that signed these huge contracts that looking back retrospectively 6 months or a year later, everybody was like, that was crazy. Like, why were you doing that? It didn't make any sense. And yet in the moment, there were a bunch of teams that made those mistakes. So you wonder if this condensed offseason where teams have to make a decision about this guy or that guy or signing free agents or making trades, and it's all bogged down into 2 or 3 weeks, are there going to be teams that make big mistakes because it's just on such a crunch timeline? That'll be interesting, I think, to see what happens this summer. And maybe Philly falls into that, maybe they don't. But if it was me, I would definitely hold on to Embiid and Simmons. I think both of those guys are too talented. I don't know if they'll ever get to their ceiling. Embiid, because of his conditioning and just being in shape and making sure that he's doing the things that he's supposed to do from that standpoint. And then Simmons, we all know what the flaw in his game is. Can he develop even a semi-functional jump shot? And if he could, he suddenly transforms from being an all-star level player to maybe being a transcendent player because he's so good in transition. He's such a great passer at his size. He goes to the rim hard. If he had any kind of a jump shot at all to go with those skills offensively and then what he can do on the defensive end as a multi-positional defender, man, but is he going to get there? I don't know. Is Embiid going to get there? I don't know. But if they do, they have the highest ceiling. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
All right, so we talked about players that are opting out. We talked about Oladipo, Bradley Beal, all the other ones. How about Dwight Howard decided that he is playing? I'm sure you saw that he's going to be playing. Now, once again, I don't know. I mean, Dwight Howard's been surprisingly pretty good for the Lakers this year. So I think that's a very good thing, especially after losing Avery Bradley. Having Dwight Howard to come off the bench and be like, 18 to 20 minutes a game guy, energy, do his thing. I think that's a good news for the Lakers, right?
Yeah, I think what you have to look at with Dwight Howard is, as much as it is Dwight Howard playing 18 minutes, I think it's the next guy up doesn't have to play those 18 minutes. And maybe Dwight Howard is just slightly more functional and better than the guys behind him. And if it's less minutes for JaVale McGee, and if you divide them up between Howard and McGee, then maybe you get the best of both of those guys as opposed to JaVale McGee having to play 28 minutes a game.
Hey, I saw a video of him working out in the gym, Dwight Howard. He was shooting threes and swishing them, Mike. And, maybe he's going to build that into his repertoire over this break.
Well, wasn't Shaq like a 90% free throw shooter in practice too?
Probably.
I think he was. Who knows? Dwight Howard has clearly outplayed what you, I, and most experts thought he was going to be able to do when the Lakers signed him. Everybody kind of just blew that off as, that's meaningless. And it turned out it wasn't meaningless. And I think for the Lakers, the interesting part going into the postseason is how many minutes in crunch time against the Clippers and the Bucks or whoever comes out of the East, how many minutes is Anthony Davis going to play at center in the biggest games of the year? And that's really where I think the Lakers can unlock some of the versatility and do some interesting things, especially on the defensive end of the floor. Because I'm sorry, if you have Dwight Howard or JaVale McGee out on the court, you're not maximizing. You don't have your best five guys out on the floor if one of those two guys is your center. So for them to be able to maximize, hopefully, what, you know, what Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee can give them, great. But I think it's more important that Anthony Davis plays some center. And clearly, you understand why they don't do it in the regular season. They don't want to get him beat up and have him battling in the trenches with bigger guys. And he's always thought of himself more as a power forward than as a center. But if they can put him at center, it unlocks a lot of things that the Lakers can do. And maybe Frank Vogel's just kind of holding that in his bag until he really needs it.
Yep, I agree. I think he's definitely going to play lots of center during this time.
Coaches, we've teamed up with E3 Analytics so you can now purchase three of their exclusive new playbooks. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from Coach Don Showalter of USA Basketball, Coach Mike Flynn from the Illawarra Hawks in Australia, who coached LaMelo Ball last season, and Coach Tyler Whitcomb from West Michigan Aviation Academy. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
Next topic. The big news being, you know, over the last few days is all these team facilities being shut down. So we've got Milwaukee shut theirs down. Brooklyn's been shut down. The Clippers shut down. Denver shut down. Sacramento shut down. Miami shut down. We think there's one more team. I couldn't find it, but all these teams shutting down their facilities because of one or two cases of coronavirus. Now, it's been clear that they haven't said, Mike, like if it was a player, or they just said someone in the traveling party. So it could have been a coach. It could have been a player. But what does this mean for when we go to Orlando? My personal opinion is I think it's inevitable that there's going to be more cases of this when we get to Orlando. I just think, obviously, we've been talking about this. We would be surprised if there wasn't. So it just, how do they contain it if it happens when there's two guys from a team or two guys from a specific traveling group that gets it? Like, how are they going to handle it? Are they going to have to quarantine everybody, or are they going to, what are they going to do? So I just think this is interesting. Obviously, you know, with all these teams that have already shut down facilities, what does that mean going forward? Your take.
Well, as far as the facilities go, clearly all you're doing there is trying to be as preventative as possible. So you don't want to have an outbreak with any one team before the teams even get to Orlando. So if you keep those facilities open and players and management and coaches are still coming into that facility together and it spreads amongst the team, then you have a real problem if a team is wiped out before they even get there, which is almost where Brooklyn is. Now, I don't know if we attribute that necessarily to their practice facility, but at this point, Brooklyn's pretty much been decimated as a real team in any way, shape, or form heading into Orlando. So you have that. I think it's a preventative measure. That's why they close. As far as what happens when they get there, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the plan is that if someone tests positive, whoever that is, or however many people that are that will be, they're going to be quarantined by themselves, I'm assuming, in their hotel room is what I'm guessing, right? I mean, they're not going to take them out of the bubble. So you're going to have to sit in your hotel room by yourself for 10 days or 12 days or whatever it is that they've decided is the right length of time. And everybody else is just going to continue to go about their business. I mean, I can't imagine that they're going to shut down everybody if one or two people get it, because then you just can't – then it's not possible. There's no way that they're going to get through this thing without somebody or multiple somebodies testing positive. And if they do, if that means you're shutting down the whole team or the whole traveling party, that's just not going to work. That's untenable. You're not going to be able to play the season out. So I think what's going to happen is those individuals who test positive – quarantine for the prescribed amount of time in their hotel room by themselves. They have to test positive or test negative twice in order to get out of quarantine, and then they're back on the floor. And meanwhile, you're going to continue to do the same testing with everybody else that all the players and the people inside of the bubble are being subjected to, which is whatever, once a day or however they're setting up the testing.
Every other day. I think it's every
other. Yeah. So maybe if they, maybe if your team or somebody within your team tests positive, maybe they step that up. I don't know the answer to that. Probably yeah. It's probably in the NBA document. Listen, but I guess my point is they have a plan and they're not going to shut down the entire team or the entire thing based off one or two tests. The question becomes, and Adam Silver's been somewhat evasive on this.
The tipping point question, right?
The tipping point, right. What? How many cases becomes too many as a league, as, for the league as a whole? And then for me, it still goes back to what I've talked about all along. If a star gets it right in the middle of a playoff series and has to quarantine for 10 to 14 days, what do we do then? And if multiple guys on one team get it and suddenly your roster of 17, including the two-way players, gets down to 8, and of the people that are testing positive, there are two or three starters, or they're the superstar and three other guys that play in the rotation. I just, man, when we talk about trying to get to a legitimate champion, I just don't see that happening. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, if we get to a point where, like, LeBron and AD are out because they both tested positive, I mean, you might as well chalk it up to, you know, that the season's a wash, essentially, because then it's not going to be legitimate. If the two best,
right, that's what I'm
two
saying.
Of the like, best three right, players exactly. in the league or four players in the league are out from the same team, I mean, who knows? I think, you know, what's interesting is we don't know which players, we don't know all the players that tested positive and whatnot. I mean, you'd have to imagine LeBron was like, of all the people, the way he takes care of his body, he probably was the most cautious, one of the most cautious people. Would you agree with that statement? Like,
maybe, or maybe he tried to outsmart the system and get it early.
I mean, he did play a lot of pickup games. He had those illegal videos going on in the middle of the quarantine, right? Him was playing with
yeah,
Simmons and them.
Right. Right. And there were other guys that I didn't recognize. So who knows who those guys are or where they're from.
Maybe they're future members of the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, it could be. That could very well be. Well, okay. So let's do some wild speculation. We talked last week a little bit about, I can't remember the name of the guy that you mentioned who wrote the article about people basically trying to get it on purpose, which is what we just said with LeBron.
It was the guy from it was an NFL guy who said I think it was Albert Breer, but I don't know for sure.
Okay, so you have that theory of did guys get it preemptively? It doesn't seem like that's the case though, because at this point, what did they test? 325 people, or
in the first round of testing between June 24th and June 29th, I think it was. Oh man, I had it pulled up, and then we skipped that.
Those are the players, right?
Yeah, that number is strictly 25 out of 351 players tested positive. But the thing is, if they were already had it, like say they had it at the beginning of the quarantine, they're not going to test positive anymore.
Right, but at that point, if you had it, you would have had it not on purpose, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't have been seeking it out. If you had it in March or April, there was still thought then that the season's going to be coming back around soon and you want to be ready to be able to play and you still weren't sure. I mean, again, we're still not sure now, but clearly then the information was even more sketchy. And so I doubt any guys were preemptively getting it then. And it would seem like if that was a trend or if that was something that players were thinking about doing or talking about, that would have shown up in these statistics of the first 325 players testing, which again, thankfully that's not the case. Thankfully players didn't do that. And, you know, we would hate to see where guys are purposely infecting themselves in order or exposing themselves to it in order to get it just so that they could be out of the way. Well, yeah. And plus, I don't know if you've read anything. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I don't know if you've read anything, but it seems like there's questions about whether or not once you have it that you're immune. That's the things that I've been reading lately is they're not convinced. There really isn't any definitive proof that once you have it that you're now immune. I read something yesterday. I forget what the source was.
And this just goes back to all our talking. I mean, we get so much misinformation. We have no clue what's true. I mean, I think the only thing I do know is I've seen these people that have done these I mentioned it on the podcast last week was – all these people that are doing the like chicken pox parties back from the 70s, they're bringing their kids and trying to get it all just to have it over with and done with. And I mean, I have not personally heard of anyone that's tested positive two separate times after testing negative. And I've not seen any reports of that.
No, so, I haven't either.
So that might be just one of those theories out there. Obviously, we won't know until it happens and people are doing it, getting it multiple times. So I don't know. There's so much misinformation out there. So,
all right. Speaking of misinformation,
uh-oh.
So I have a person in my neighborhood who I was talking to the other night. We were outside and he was throwing the ball with his son and I was throwing the ball with my son. So we were playing catch. And he
wait,
and I
baseball?
We were throwing a tennis. We each set of father and sons were throwing a tennis ball. So
I thought you were throwing a baseball. I almost fell out of my chair, Mike.
I don't know if I could even catch a ball with a glove anymore, but regardless. So I was sitting there talking to him, and his theory was, and I had never heard this one, and preface this again by saying this is completely egregious, wild speculation with nothing at all.
And this is a neighbor. This is a person in your neighborhood.
Yes, this is not.
Do you know what he does for occupation, Mike?
We're not even going to go any further than this. So his quote theory was that he wonders if there is a wink-wink deal amongst the NBA and its superstar brethren that once in Orlando that the testing will be basically placebo testing, for lack of a better way of saying it, and that maybe some players at the end of the bench will test positive because it would seem impossible that nobody would test positive, but that no players who are influential on the top teams will be diagnosed as positive, and that it will be basically a wink-wink deal between the players' union and the NBA to ensure that no superstar players come down.
This guy should be a guest on the next Bill Simmons podcast, and they can talk about conspiracy theories.
I thought it was interesting.
I think the thing is, that works theoretically. That works theoretically as long as LeBron's not like keeled over pooping himself or throwing up all over the floor. I mean, that doesn't work if he's doing that, right?
Well, he could just have the flu.
Oh, that's true. I mean, I guess that's – but the second that someone's like, oh, LeBron's out with the flu, they're going to be like, he has the Rona.
Well, but I'm saying a lot of these guys – just like a lot of the population of America are going to be asymptomatic, and they're not going to have any symptoms. So it might just be that they've tested positive, but they're not showing any signs of it. And if that's the case, then it just becomes this wink-wink.
No harm, no foul. I'm not buying it.
No, it's a huge conspiracy. There would have to be a lot of behind the scenes maneuvering of people to keep quiet in order for that to happen. So I don't see that happening, but I just thought it was kind of a wild conspiracy theory.
Michael Jordan got suspended for betting level conspiracy right there.
Well, there would be no way to corroborate any of it. And yeah, I don't see that as a viable option for the NBA. It doesn't seem like the Adam Silver NBA would be willing to do those kinds of things, especially when we don't know enough about this. But I thought it was just an interesting way of thinking about it that I hadn't heard anybody else out there talk about. So I thought it was worth at least having a discussion about it.
All right. So I think the last thing that we want to talk about here, Mike, and we'll make it short because it's kind of a silly topic anyways, is the 8 teams not included in the playoffs are talking about getting together and playing in Chicago in a bubble, having a kind of, I don't know what this would even be, like just scrimmaging and practicing and like, would it be televised? Like, what are they thinking? Like, why are they even doing this?
All right. Well, I think, and I don't know all the details of the plan, but clearly it's not going to happen on the same timeline as Orlando. So I think it's supposed to be sometime in the fall, correct?
It's supposed to be in September.
Right.
So it's going to be happening concurrently with the playoffs.
Right. Concurrently. However, at that point, the NBA, let's say it's September 1st. At that point, the Orlando bubble will have been in place for July and August. So you'll have 2 months of teams being in the bubble to evaluate whether or not going and playing in a bubble in Chicago is feasible and is safe at least based on what they are able to discern from what happens in Orlando. So I can see where putting that into the planning stages, you can certainly understand why the teams want to do that, why they would be at a huge competitive disadvantage if they don't get a chance to play and they're off for 10 or 11 months since they last played a game when they have to come back and go to training camp. Huge advantage for the teams that at least got back together and were able to play a little bit in Orlando. So I can understand why those teams would want to go to Chicago and get some practice in, get some scrimmaging in against other teams. Makes complete sense. Will they be able to do it? If the Orlando bubble works, then yeah, I could definitely see that happening. If the Orlando bubble blows up and doesn't work, then they're not going to have it anyway. So I guess the only way that
here's
that...
Here's my question, Mike.
Okay.
Is Tristan Thompson going to risk injury and go play in this? No. Is Kevin Love going to risk injury and go play in this? No. Is Andre Drummond going to risk injury and go play in this? No. So, I just pulled three Cavs players. So I'm sure if you look across the board, a lot of these, it's going to almost be a summer league, right? I mean, that's what you got to think of it as. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think you look at it as a voluntary, what does football call it? OTAs. Organized team activities. I think that's how you're going to look at it.
Do you think they make the veterans come and be a part of it? They won't have to play, but they have to come and be a part of it.
Because I think you're in the same situation that you're in Orlando, where guys are going to have the option to go or not go. Maybe there's some stipulation. Like, I have no idea. I don't even know the answer to this. Maybe you can answer it. But what happens with the players who are not on these teams in Orlando as far as the pay for the remainder of their regular season?
I don't have the answer to that question.
You would have to guess that because it's league revenue, right? When teams are playing, the teams that are in the playoffs get a bigger share of the playoff revenue. But as far as the regular season games, I would think that if they can complete the regular season and complete whatever their obligations are to the regional sports networks, that the Cavs, Bulls, Knicks, all these teams, all those players are going to earn the remainder of their regular season salary. I would have to assume that. So I guess you're not going to, if you think about the Chicago thing, you're not going to at that point, that's not going to be tied to them earning any more money. It's going to be a voluntary, hey, we're doing these team activities. If you want to come back in and be able to get some coaching, be able to run up and down the floor in a somewhat organized setting with other NBA players.
Mike, I got the answer for you.
Okay, good.
NBA players do same share of salaries whether or not their teams are in the playoff or not.
So, for example,
Clippers guard salary this season was $8 million. Alfred Payton for the Knicks salary was $8 million. Oh, my God. Alfred Payton and Lou Williams are making the same amount of money. Something's wrong with the NBA. Okay? they're going to get the same amount of money. All the players are going to get paid, and I mean all of them. I mean even the guys whose seasons are over are going to get paid the same prorated amount as the players in the bubble. So there you go.
Okay. All right. So that makes sense. I mean, I think that's certainly what we thought and is not surprising at all. So now if you take that and project it forward to Chicago, there's not going to be any monetary incentive for guys to be there. It's just going to be, hey, if you want to come in, like I said, and play against NBA players, you want to have some coaching, you want to be in an organized, maybe non-complete pickup setting and play some games, great.
In order to make it work, though, I think that they're going to actually need to have – I mean, if you're like the Cavs and your top six players all sit out and it's just your bottom, why are you even bothering? So they're going to have to come to some sort of agreement that some of these players are going to have to play. I'm not talking veterans. Maybe, you know, maybe like the top – you know, if you've been in a league for 8 years –
okay, well, for the Cavs – right, all right. For the Cavs, the only guys who matter that are going to show up, right, are – Sexton, Garland, Kevin Porter Jr., and Windler.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, those are the only four guys that you're really going to care about in terms of really being a core piece of what you're trying to develop. And when you're those guys and you're 19, 20, 21 years old,
you should be there.
I don't know. Why wouldn't you want to go and play basketball?
That's true.
I don't really get why you wouldn't.
Well, I think Larry Nance will be there too. I know he's not.
But again, like you said, there's a risk. Yeah, there's a risk. For any of these guys, there's a risk of injury. So does the NBA offer sort of the same insurance deal that they offer to some of the guys who are free agents that to come to Orlando? Yep. I don't know. what seems easy and clear cut of, hey, let's offer this, when you really start to drill down into the details, it becomes a lot more complicated. And I think that's the same thing that we've seen with the bubble in Orlando. Is on the surface, it's like, oh yeah, it's a no-brainer. It'll work, no problem. And then you start just looking at all the logistics of trying to make it happen. And you realize that it just becomes fraught with peril everywhere you turn. And we've talked about it now for weeks and weeks and weeks, that the ability of the NBA to pull this off and crown a legitimate champion in October is, I think it's pretty low.
All right. So I think this is a perfect point to bring back our weekly segment, Mike. What is your percentage that we're going to get to the end of this and we're going to have a legitimate champion? I don't remember. I think I went first last week. I'm going to let you go first this week.
All right. So I was at 40% last week. I'm going to stay at 40% right now. I don't feel better or worse about it. In a lot of ways, I feel like every day that goes forward, I should feel worse. But the initial testing numbers are kind of right about where I thought they would be. So I'm not more alarmed, but I'm also not more encouraged. I think this next week will start to tell as we get down there and guys get into the bubble and they test them again when they're there. You're going to have teams start practicing and at least passing each other in the hallways, if not playing ping pong or doing whatever else they're going to be doing together.
Unless their name's Nikola Jokic, right? We forgot to talk about that, Mike.
Yeah, he just didn't make it back in time to make the team flight from Denver to Orlando. I guess he had to get two negative tests in Serbia in order to return to the U.S. And then once he was here in the U.S., he needed to have two negative tests in order to be able to get on the team flight from Denver to Orlando. And because of the testing and the delays of getting the results back, he was not able to pull that off and was therefore not on the team flight today to Orlando. Now, there didn't seem to be any nervousness or worry that he wasn't going to make it to the bubble. It was just the fact that he did not get on the flight. He's one of the guys with his weight loss that I'm going to be most curious to see what he looks like and what his appearance and just transformation of his body, what it's done to his game. I'm really, really curious about that.
Sorry to derail you, but I forgot.
It's all right. So I'm still at 40%, I guess. I haven't changed. There's been nothing in the news this week that has dissuaded me from thinking that we're about 40% of getting a legitimate champion. Let's say the situation with Brooklyn had been with one of the top four teams in either conference, then it becomes a little dicier. But because Brooklyn really wasn't playing a factor in who's going to win the title anyway, that situation didn't change my odds.
All right. Well, I'm going to surprise you here, Mike.
Okay.
I'm going down. I'm going down from, I think I was at 50 last week, right? 50%?
Yeah, you were 50.
I'm going to drop to 45. I'm not quite going to your level, but I'm going to drop a little bit. And here's my reasoning.
All right.
Florida is just basically a petri dish right now. And I mean, I don't know another way to put it. So the fact that all of these things are going on, they're going into Florida, they're flying in. Now, they're on the team plane. I'm assuming they're flying into Orlando International Airport. Okay. And that place is a petri dish because there's just millions of people walking now. My assumption would be that the players aren't getting off the plane and going into the airport. My assumption would be that they're getting the buses right from there. They're riding on Disney buses, which is pretty hilarious that Disney people are, I mean, they're picking them up. Obviously, they're doing the whole bubble thing. So there was a picture today of the Orlando Magic getting on the Disney Magical Express to the bubble. So obviously I'm assuming the NBA players aren't going to be going into the airport. I just think that there's a chance that they're going to all get to Orlando and everything's going to seem fine. And then 3 days in, it's just going to hit the fan and there's going to be like, I don't want to say an outbreak, but a large amount of players that are going to get it. Is this for sure going to happen? No, but I see the probability of that happening more than I did last week. So that's why I dropped to 45%.
That's fair. I think you're right in that it's going to all come to, if it does go down and they have to shut it down, it's going to be like, all right, everything's great. And then within a course of 2 or 3 days, it's just going to explode with the number of people that end up getting it, and they're going to have to shut it.
I mean, theoretically, I know that this campus environment situation, okay, where they're going to have certain free reign around things, okay, the teams are going to be intermingling even when they're not playing, right? They're not going to be complete. I would have to assume.
Well, if you're staying at the same resort, I'm assuming that you're going to interact with the teams that are in the same resort as you at some point.
So say Kawhi, I'm just using Kawhi as an example. Kawhi is intermingling with LeBron, or Kawhi tests positive. Well, now all these people that not necessarily he's only been playing against, but he's been intermingling with at the hotel could now potentially have it. Like I said,
that goes back to what you talked about earlier, which is, are you contact tracing those guys back to, okay, they interacted with this team, they interacted with these guys, they were in this hotel room, they were at this spot, who else was there? Do we then need to step up the testing? Do we need to quarantine those people? And once you get it into that mode, now it becomes almost impossible to be able to do anything. The only thing you can do from an NBA standpoint is quarantine the guy who has tested positive, and then let the chips fall where they may with everybody else. Because if you start quarantining everybody who came in contact with somebody who gets it, forget it. It's over.
Well, I think that's the one thing. Like the PGA is, I know you don't follow golf, but they learned from some lessons from these mistakes they were making. The first week, there was nothing, no tests positive. Then week two, there were a whole bunch. And they stepped up the testing. And they kind of told the players, listen, guys, we got to get this under control. Like, you guys got to follow the rules, because there were some people that weren't necessarily following the rules to the T that they should have been. Now, once again, there were some outstanding circumstances, like one guy and his caddy were at a funeral. So that's understandable. They're going to go to the funeral, and that's where they potentially caught it, okay? But some of the players weren't necessarily following protocols and some of the things that were going on at the clubs. Well, now in the last 2 weeks, there's been zero tests, a positive. So they've seemingly figured it out. Now, is it going to stay that way? I don't know. But I think the whole thing is going to be feathering and figuring it out. And if they can adjust quickly and rapidly after, you know, if the first, because it's in it, like you said, we've said it multiple times, there's going to inevitably be some kind of a situation where three or four players are going to get it. It's how does the NBA control that and not let it get to the point of explosion? So I'm just saying, I'm going 45%. I don't really feel that much worse about it, but just with all the outstanding circumstances surrounding the whole situation, I just feel a little less, a little more uneasy about it than I did last week. So that's.
Well, I think it's fair to say that. Yeah, I think it's fair to say that both of us still hold out hope that it can happen. I certainly don't feel like there's no chance that they can be successful. But I just think there's a lot of things for them to navigate. And so, therefore, I'm still keeping it below 50%.
Listen, I'm really just hoping they make it through this, because then we could just be talking real NBA stuff and not just talking about speculation. And, I mean, we might have to be busting out. You know, we might have to go to two NBA episodes a week or something, because there's going to be so much going on.
There's going to be a lot of games. There's going to be a lot of things to talk about for sure, which will be exciting. It'll be great to talk actual real NBA basketball instead of just talking about what might happen in the bubble or what might not happen in the bubble. So I guess what remains to be seen. Anything else that we need to hit on?
No, I think that's it. We're ending at 9:30. Oh my gosh, we're done at 9:30 p.m. This is pretty impressive, Mike. I'm excited.
All right, let's wrap it up. We'll just do some housekeeping things here at the end. As all of you know who have been listening, we have dropped three brand new podcasts as part of the Hoopheads Pod Network. Previously, we had let Thrive with Trevor Huffman out. We also put out there Beyond the Ball with Justin Gerstung and Eric Klump. And this week, we released the CoachMaze.com podcast with Jason Mays, which is a look at coaching high school basketball. And Jason's going to take a deep dive into what it takes to be successful as a high school coach and try to give our coaches out there one key takeaway in every episode, something that they can actually use to help them make their programs better. And so we're super excited about those. We got a couple more coming very soon. We're going to have our first NBA team-centered pod, Cavalier Central, with Justin Meacham, will be coming up real soon. I'd say that one's probably within the next 2 weeks or so. We'll probably have that first team-based NBA pod out there. If you are an NBA fan, an NBA blogger, somebody who enjoys following a team, you've ever thought about jumping on and starting your own podcast but weren't sure how to do it, we'd love to hear from you. We are looking to, again, add one podcast for every NBA team out there. So if that's something that you'd be interested in, please shoot me an email, mike@hoopheadspod.com, and we'll make that happen. And if you haven't heard about our webinar series, we've been getting a great response from that, from coaches. This week's webinar, which will go on Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, is with Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential. He's going to be talking about skill development from both a team and an individual standpoint. And when you talk basketball skill development, there's probably nobody more well-versed in that topic than Joe. So you can go to hoopheadspod.com/webinars to get signed up for that. We are super excited about it. And we have I believe we're up with the schedule for the webinars all the way through July. And then we'll be getting August's schedule up pretty soon. So a lot of great guests coming up on the Hoopheads Pod. Check that out every Monday morning and Friday morning in your feed. And then please check out the new shows. Subscribe to those. Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, and the brand new CoachMaze.com podcast. Whew. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. Jay, it's nice to be able to not have to stay up tonight until super duper late in order to get this thing up and running. So we're thankful for that. And we're thankful for everybody out there who's listening and checking us out. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.